heard Angel Fire, and that's in New Mexico, and we are at the resort, and we have Paul Davids here, well-known movie producer, screenwriter, and entrepreneur. And Paul, is your first annual film festival went well, and still going strong.
We're calling it the Sir Arthur Film Festival, after Arthur Conan Doyle. And Jerry, the filmmakers who are here, unfortunately, can't win an Oscar while they're here, but they can win an Arthur.
Yeah, and that's a good-looking trophy.
It's a beautiful award. Janet Saylor did such a great job of designing it. I inspired her, of course. I was deeply entrenched in research on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who is becoming one of my new folk heroes. And I'm so sorry they're ready to tear down his house in England. If anybody in England is listening to this broadcast, save Sir Arthur's house, please. You don't need condos there.
What did they do, condemn it or something?
No, it was bought by a developer who intends to turn it into condos. And he doesn't have the support over there in England to preserve it as a historical monument, because over there he doesn't have an equal reputation to people like Jane Austen or Charles Dickens. Doesn't that take it away?
Yeah, that certainly does. It blows me away, actually.
Well, you know, he was convinced in spiritualism, which has had a black eye in the West, you know, forever. Belief in spirits and communing with the dead and seances, you know, it's all in our culture way, way out there. But there's some scientists who've been taking a really careful look at a lot of these ideas, and they're standing up, but it all gets curiouser and curiouser the deeper you look.
I was not able to get over to your presentation that I wanted to see, but Shanina Johnson, one of our producers, did, and she's still talking about it. And I have a little bit of knowledge about it because we did kind of a hint about it on the air, a little preview. And this is something new for you.
Well,
isn't it?
Yes, I'm working on a film now called The Life After Death Project, which is a feature documentary which will have many parts to it. Part one is nearing completion. Why did I get into this? This is not something that I've had as a keen interest in the past. I started out as a skeptic. You know, I have a degree from Princeton in psychology. I've studied the sciences. I don't just jump into belief in different things. My interest in UFOs came about as a result of a daylight sighting in 1987. Something unambiguous before my eyes with my two kids.
Where was this sighting?
It's been discussed many times, but from my house near Pasadena. Mm-hmm. We went out on the roof of the house after my daughter called to me that there was a flying saucer. I wasn't anxious to interrupt my work for what I figured surely would be a Goodyear blimp, but, you know, she yelled at me. I had to get upstairs. She saw a flying saucer. She wasn't kidding. Well, she wasn't kidding. My life hasn't been the same since then, but let me tell you, Jerry, for those interested in ufology and flying saucers, I think most people with an interest in that subject come to feel that they're machines. You know, they're nuts and bolts, that they're, you know, it's somebody's version of a truck or a helicopter or an airplane, but it's something that most of us have never seen before. It's some other technology. All right, that's fascinating. It's mysterious. We wonder where they've come from. But now this other thing, you know, this thing about life after death, spirits, communication with people have departed. My interest in this started when something impossible happened to me on March 18th of 2009. Something impossible, and I haven't gotten over it since, but I've certainly looked into it, and I've had scientific labs working on it in Indiana and New Jersey for a year.
And we talked a little bit about that earlier, and you did this in your presentation, and it's in, I guess, in this first segment of your documentary series?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a man I was very, very close to who was paramount to my documentary, The Sci-Fi Boys, about the history of special effects and science fiction. who passed away at age 92. His name, Forrest J. Ackerman, very, very famous man in the field of science fiction. And there is a group of people that feel they've heard from him since he departed. And he had a marvelous sense of humor. Absolutely, I think, one of the greatest senses of humor since Mark Twain. You know, he was mischievous. He was a trickster. His play on words was brilliant. He could always find the joke to be made, the play on words, the pun, in anything you said. He could come up with a twist that would break you out laughing, no matter how serious you were. And so at a certain level, I think what I've been experiencing for this last year is this man's wonderful, mischievous, cosmic joke that he's taken beyond the grave. Now, I know the skeptics are going to have a field day with me on this, but I'm telling you, I'm ready to put the research of Indiana University and New Jersey University, Chem Labs, behind what I'm saying. Those guys are baffled to the core, and they've gone on record to say so.
So there's proof.
There was evidence.
Yeah.
There was evidence.
What
yeah.
You
well, Fari Ackerman was an editor, an editor of a magazine called Famous Monsters, which at its inception was a very funny magazine. I mean, it was filled with pictures of ghosts and werewolves and vampires and mummies, and it always had Fari Ackerman's hysterically funny caption underneath the pictures that, you know, that kind of softened the horror of some of those movies. So he was brilliant at that, and I've forgotten where we're going.
I've lost my train of thought.
Basically,
we're talking about this documentary, and you did a little presentation today that was kind of connected.
You were asking about the evidence. Oh, yeah. That was it. That Fari Ackerman, he was an editor. You know, editors spend a lot of their times taking a pen or something like that and crossing out words, right? Well, I had a document. I was alone in my house. I was reviewing this document, long document with all kinds of lists of phone calls and business meetings. It was tax time. And I put it down on my bed for 5 minutes and went into the bathroom for 5 minutes. And I was alone in my house. And when I came out, someone had edited my document. To put it simply, someone or something unseen had crossed out 4 words on this document. And the blackout of it, that looks almost like one of these censored documents you'd get from the CIA, from the Freedom of Information Act. Yeah. You know, someone chose 4 words to block out of my document.
Yeah.
2 of them sort of blocked out, but you can read through it. But 2 of those words, which is a name, 100% blocked out. Well, it was really a baffling mystery to me. Why? Why did it happen? Who did it? What did it mean? And that has put me on a quest now that has lasted for over a year, and it's fascinating. It's opened up doors for me.
You've had this ink scientifically examined.
Yes. Yes. And not only are the chemists baffled about how it could have been done, because they can't reproduce it in the lab. They can't. I'm talking about people that are absolute experts in solvents and pigments and inks and paints. And they're on record that it's disturbing. That's one of the words that they use. It's a mystery. It's baffling. And while they were doing the research, a kind of mischievous trickster strangeness happened to each of them in their labs and in their homes while they were doing the research, some of which I happened to catch on camera while it was happening.
And when will this all be released, do you think? Before Christmas?
No, it's always hard to predict with my things when they'll be wrapped up, but I don't expect to have it in the market until next year, okay. 2011. You know, because 2010, now I finished a movie called Before We Say Goodbye.
Yeah, and you had a big deal not far from here recently over Labor Day. Tell us about that.
Well, the Labor Day one didn't happen. What we did do, as you know, we had a sneak preview in Roswell, New Mexico.
Okay.
It's based on a stage play, and the writer of the play wanted to restage it over Labor Day, but they couldn't get it ready to put on the play. And the play was called We Are Hispanic American Women, okay? A very unusual title. We did change the title for the movie. We call the movie Before We Say Goodbye. What I loved about the story was the honesty with which it showed a small group, a family of Hispanic Americans, and all of their desires, their goals, their problems, their fears, their loves, their religious beliefs. And the Virgin of Guadalupe, that Catholic story, is at the center of this story, which is about...
And you actually were able to film it.
Oh, this was a great moment for me, Jerry, that the Basilica of the Virgin of Guadalupe in Mexico City gave permission to me personally to come there with my crew and film in the basilica where the purportedly miraculous tomb of Saint Juan Diego is, showing the Virgin of Guadalupe. It was an amazing experience to be there, and that story is really about a grandmother, a mother of four grown Hispanic American children, who has intense religious faith. She is a Catholic from the beginning. She is a Catholic till the end. She will be a Catholic to the day of her death. And for those who don't believe, she tries to be patient with them, but the Lord Jesus rules her house and rules her life, and she believes that the Virgin grants miracles. Well, I believe in miracles, Jerry, and I don't believe it matters what faith you are. Miracles will come into your life. Whether you're a Buddhist or a Hindu or a Muslim or a Jew or a Christian, miracles happen to people. Sometimes within the framework and context of their faith, with the symbols of their faith, and sometimes in ways they can't recognize. But just like all these other paranormal things we talk about, Jerry, we don't direct them. They come to us as surprises. Maybe rewards, maybe punishments.
Yeah.
But they come to us when we don't expect them. We don't direct that aspect of reality. And some of us, if you live long enough, will have these things happen. And they are marvels. They change your heart, your mind. They open the mind. And they give a new richness to life.
When Paul Davids, we've got to put another thing besides movie producer, writer. Now, we got to put philosopher. That's what you just said. It's very deep.
Thank you. I'm speaking from the heart. It's what I feel. And I've tried to let philosophy direct the choice of the movies I've made.
I've noticed that, and a lot of them are interconnected, but not at all, but they deal with subjects. And I was trying to figure out how to tie that together.
Well, most of them go in some way to the core of what are we doing here and who are we?
Right.
And we got a certain amount of time to spend on this earth, and how should we spend it? You know, what is worth our time? I chose a topic like Timothy Leary. I made the film Timothy Leary's Dead. He was an American philosopher, very underappreciated, who spent 5 years behind bars. He got into a lot of trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't know how many books of psychology and philosophy Timothy Leary has written. Now, if I told you that a bibliography of his writings, this is a list of all of his books and papers with a paragraph about each one, that takes 300 pages.
Wow.
It's a 300-page book just to describe what
he did.
It's a mammoth. So I did a biography of Timothy Leary that got me into a lot of trouble. Timothy was a trickster. He was into blowing your mind as a way to open it up. And, you know, people didn't like the ending to my movie, that Timothy was interested in having, you know, his body cryogenically preserved. Not the whole body. He didn't have the money for that. It's just the head. He was going to be decapitated. That was his plan when he died. They were going to freeze his head.
Did it happen?
And, well, I show it in the movie.
Okay.
You know, it looks absolutely real. I've never said that it was real.
Okay.
I've never made
I was
that
just
claim.
Trying to find out.
But
it looks real.
Well,
maybe it
is.
He's not going to admit it. He's not going to admit it.
Maybe it is. But the official version is that he was cremated and his ashes were sent into space.
Okay.
But being a philosopher, Jerry, I went on from that. I made a movie about Vincent van Gogh, Starry Night, the great painter, who had no end of troubles and committed suicide and never hardly earned a dime for his work. And then I did The Artist and The Shaman, And the list goes on and on. You know, the sci-fi boys. Fact, Jesus in India.
Yeah, right. Jesus in India is... we still get people talking about that.
That Jesus in India was the adventure of my lifetime. I went to India and filmed there for 6 weeks in the summer. Terribly, terribly hot. Awful monsoon rains. We managed to stay a little ahead of the rains. We were dying of the heat every day, but we went to the greatest Hindu temples and Buddhist monasteries and ancient Christian churches, and we were looking for more information about, you know, there are so many myths that Jesus was in India for a certain number of years, and the basic question is it all just legend or myth, or is there evidence underneath it? And that's what we were looking for. It was an adventure.
And you presented it very well, and you didn't overdwell on the dangers of probing.
But there were dangers.
Yes, there were.
There were. And it's really...
I mean, the people there take this pretty seriously.
Yes. I haven't been invited to have a premiere of this movie in India. I'm sorry to say. It's shown on the Sundance Channel. In the United States, it was the primetime documentary before Christmas, two years in a row on the Sundance Channel. And the film festival we were supposed to attend in India, in Goa, there were some rumblings there, and it was canceled. It was canceled. But if it had gone ahead, I would have landed in Mumbai by my plane ticket the night of the terrorist attacks in Mumbai.
Well, here again, when we talk about, the directions and someone looking over us, and we're reacting to paranormal events, they're not necessarily created by us, but maybe somebody's looking over you.
I do believe in this other that is looking in on us, Jerry, and I think it's a wonderful thing if your heart is given to good things and not the dark side.
Yeah. Let's get back to the film festival here. This is the first annual one.
Yes.
Governor Richardson wrote you a letter.
Oh, I was so pleased with his letter, Jerry. I'm honored. I'm a fan of Bill Richardson. I'm not happy with his low poll numbers. Come on, everybody. He's made a lot of contributions.
Yeah, he's a good man.
I like the man.
I agree with you, too.
All right. So at the risk of... making a controversial political statement, I like Governor Bill Richardson, and I'm honored that he wrote us the nicest email saying he wished that he could be here, accepting the Sir Arthur Award we're giving to him, and saying that he thinks that events like this one at Angel Fire New Mexico from the Alliance for Studying Paranormal Experience, aspiefiles.org, that he feels that this is a good event for New Mexico.
Well, you probably could not have made this movie that we were talking about earlier about without the help of New Mexico. They gave a lot of good breaks to filmmakers.
Yes, the movie called Before We Say Goodbye, which is not out yet, but we're working on that distribution now.
I guess you could have made it, but this made it a lot easier.
It helped. They have an incentive program for filmmakers here in New Mexico. They actually will rebate to the filmmakers as a tax rebate, 25% of the budget that you spend in New Mexico on taxable items.
Well, that includes buying a bottle of pop.
Yeah.
If you save the receipts.
Listen, if you're on the set and you're working hard as a director need a soda, you know, there you go. We save the receipts.
Tell me what you're going to do with this. You're calling it the After Death Project?
I'm calling it the Life After Death Project, yes. And I'm finishing volume one
sounds
now.
Sounds like you're making a series of it.
Yeah, definitely. I shot 60 hours on it last year. Some of the people who are in it actually are absolutely fascinating. For example, Richard Matheson, the great science fiction writer who wrote I Am Legend, What Dreams May Come, The Incredible Shrinking Man. The name of his book that Somewhere in Time was based on was called Bid Time Return. So he's dealt with the afterlife. He's dealt with time travel. Absolutely one of the great masters of science fiction is in the film. Danian Brinkley is in the film, who was struck by lightning and dead for 28 minutes.
28 minutes.
No respiration, no heartbeat, no EKG, and lived to tell about it. He came back into his body, and he certainly believes in life after death. He says that life is continuous. No one will ever die. Danian Brinkley is there. And then I have Whitley Strieber of Communion. As a matter of fact, his wife, Ann Strieber, is one of the two executive producers.
She's involved in that project.
She's one of the two executive producers. One of the most interesting people in the film actually is Dr. Gary Schwartz of University of Arizona in Tucson, who teaches courses in psychiatry, psychology, and medicine, and other related fields. And for well over a decade, he has made scientific investigation of life after death his calling. He's done this by studying mediums. Now, mediums, that's one of the professions that we were talking about at the beginning of this interview. So yes. Arthur Conan Doyle believed in them, spiritualism, but that our Western society, you know, dismisses it. Dr. Gary Schwartz doesn't dismiss it. He has studied mediums scientifically. And he feels it's a talent and that some people really can do it and can bring you information from the other side that you can't see how they could possibly know it. So he's worked into the film along with so many other absolutely fascinating personalities.
This all sounds fascinating. We can't wait till it gets out.
Thank you.
Sounds to me like it might be you did a big deal with Showtime one time before. You might do something again.
You never know where these things are going to show up.
Yeah, right.
You never know what the network's like at any given moment.
That's the reason they call it showbiz, because it's changing constantly.
Yes, it always shows you a different face.
Yeah. Well, David, it's always a pleasure having you here.
Thank you.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. You have something on your calendar you want to plug or something?
Do I have something on my calendar that...
You want to plug? You got anything coming up?
Well, no, I would like people to know that before we say goodbye, they can learn a lot about at beforewesaygoodbyethemovie.com. It's got a full website. And life goes on, and we're learning, we're exploring, and we're really enjoying being here in Angel Fire for this conference of the Alliance for Studying Paranormal Experience.
Paul Davids, it's always a pleasure. I'm Jerry Pippin. We're at Angel Fire. Don't go away. I'd like to take an opportunity here to talk to you about our websites. We've been adding programs and adding programs, and sometimes it's difficult to find what you're looking for. First of all, we have a search mechanism on each of our websites, and you can click, like if it's jerrypippin.com or if ipodshows.net, just search the websites, put in the name of what you're looking for, and it will come up. Check us out, won't you? Often. Jerry Pippin, and we're at Angel Fire, the 2010 Symposium and Film Festival, the Paranormal Symposium. And we have Marisa Ryan with us, who we have a lot of things in common, and you'll see about that and hear about that as we do the show here. First of all, Marisa, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Now, you speak tomorrow morning.
Yes.
And what will you be speaking about?
I will be speaking on how to contact the spirit world.
Okay, and we'll get into that in a moment. But first of all, you have quite a little history. You have a radio background, too.
I do a lot of radio. I have radio shows that I do monthly appearances on all over the United States and in the UK.
And what do you do on these shows?
Usually I do spirit communication and psychic readings. So a lot of times callers will call in and they'll ask, you know, I'll do a reading on them. I'll tell them about their relationships or their career, or I communicate with somebody who's passed over for them, and I connect them with their loved ones.
And we'll get into more about that in a minute, too. But first of all, your mother and dad from Oklahoma, I think?
Yes, they are. Yes.
And I'm an Okie, so we have that in common. And you had a terrible thing happen to you in your house. I think. Didn't you?
What happened was...
Before you even get into the story, I want to let you know, my mother was murdered in her house.
Okay.
And so we have something common here.
Okay. Originally started was my mother and my niece passed away 2 days apart at my sister's house. And it kind of got me started of investigating the afterlife and, okay, what happens now? Because this was the first real death experience.
Mm-hmm.
And after about a year of investigating, and then I also started having communication with my mother, but I really didn't know if it was real or not. At the time, I thought I was kind of making it up.
With the communications... Did you see her, or did you hear her, or was it in you felt her, or what?
I would hear her. I was a sales rep, and I spent hours in my car driving, and so I would hear her and feel her sitting in the passenger seat having full conversations with me. And I thought that I was making it up, but it was really, I just kept doing it. I figured, you know, it's not going to hurt anything. But what made really everything hit home and started was about a year after their death, I had the spirit of a murdered victim show up in my house, and she just appeared, and I saw her with my physical eyes, and she showed me her murder, details about it that no one knew, and she literally drove me crazy for about 24 hours until I finally called the police. I was able to research online and find some information. I called the detectives, and when I told them what she said...
You probably were the suspect.
You're psychic.
Yeah.
You're psychic.
No, that's the way they work.
It's exactly, and I have a law enforcement background.
I know,
I have a law enforcement background, so uh-huh. I was kind of familiar with it, but when I told them that they hadn't found her head yet, they immediately wanted to meet with me, and so when I did meet with them, I met them in a parking lot, and they had a giant picture of me and a whole file on me, and they knew everything about me, and they thought I was part of the murder. And so I ended up working with them.
So you were, if not a suspect, an interested person.
Yes. They actually thought I was the suspect's girlfriend trying to turn them in. And I worked with them for about 6 months on the case. And until they finally came and brought the case file and showed me, I sketched the suspects that did it. And then they validated for me that was them. And that's when it all became real. And I realized, you know what? This is real. And within 2 weeks of this murder girl coming to me, she told everybody on the other side I could hear her and see her. And next thing I know, I had spirits riding in my car and following me around the malls and shopping. And it was really crazy for about 2 weeks.
Now, this is a very interesting topic because I've often wondered... And thought, if I were murdered, and you could come back and talk to people and communicate, I'd damn sure make sure I'd tell somebody who did it.
Well, she did. She told me, and they got the guys that did it. She helped me sketch them because she showed me in a video form of every gruesome detail, and I could see their faces and hear their voice, and she told me things about where one of them lived, and I ended up giving all that information to the police, and they ended up finding them. And so it was interesting.
Have you worked with the police on any other cases?
I have. I have a lot of clients that come to me or people that hear me on the radio that come to me, and they're usually the families of someone who's either it's a missing person or a murder. And what they'll do is they'll bring the case because a lot of police are very reluctant to work with psychics, mainly because it's very difficult to have things admissible in court. So I have worked on many cases, missing persons. Unfortunately, most of them usually come out where they end up being murderers. And I've helped them find bodies and things like that. So I do work occasionally.
I didn't really mean to start this conversation off so morbidly, but...
It's sometimes that's just the business. It's all good, though.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit how people can find you. You have a website?
Yes, they can go to marissaryan.com.
And we have a link to that, of course.
Wonderful.
And what kind of things are you doing these days?
Well, for the past 7 years, I do 2 retreats a year. I have one coming up October 1st in Joshua Tree. It's Joshua Tree, California.
Oh, yeah, I know where it is.
It's at the Joshua Tree.
In the middle of the desert.
Exactly. Used to be called Mental Physics, and now it's the Joshua Tree Retreat Center, and this is our fifth year there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on their mailing list, but I've been through Joshua Tree a lot.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's
Why,
beautiful.
I don't know. Just driving through the desert.
It's beautiful.
Yes, it is.
I do the weekend retreats there and then also up in the mountains.
Now, what happens at that retreat?
At the retreat, well, we have a theme. This theme is a vision quest theme. And usually, like last year, I actually led an Inipi ceremony, which is a sweat lodge ceremony. And what we do is we always do psychic development. We do a lot of meditation. We always have a craft, some sort of spiritual craft that we make that helps, that's a tool that will help with either a healing tool, like we've done Native American rattles, drums. We've made drums. We do drumming ceremonies. We always have a huge fire pit, and we do a spirit circle there where we bring in messages.
And people can register and go to this?
They can go to my website and click on retreats, and it's all right there. And it's
now, you mentioned the mountains. Is that the other retreat?
Yes, in the mountains? Our spring retreat is always in the mountains.
Where?
The last 4 years it was in Idlewild at a place called Buckhorn Camp, and this year...
Yeah, now, what state is that in?
California.
Okay.
All California. And this year we're going to be holding our May retreat in, it's called Pilgrim Pines, and it's in Glen Oaks, which is right, it's in the Apple Valley area.
Yes.
So
I knew that where that was, but the first one you had me lost. I'd never been there. Where you had that last mountain retreat, what's that near?
Idlewild. It's beautiful. It's a mountain range up in the San Jacinto Mountains, and it's on the other side of
Palms. Idlewild is.
Idlewild is... it's about 30 minutes south of Palm Springs. If you're familiar with the Palm
you're
Springs...
Still in Southern California, you're right.
Yeah, if you're familiar with the Palm Springs tramway that goes to the top of the mountain,
okay,
that's the mountain where the retreat is.
Okay. Now, where do you live?
I live in Southern California, in Corona, California. And I'm born and raised in Huntington Beach, and I now am in Corona.
Well, I lived in Long Beach at one time, in Santa Monica.
Oh, okay, great.
So at least I'm familiar with where you are. So, see, we have a lot of things in common, folks, here. bill yourself? I noticed on this little write-up in the program, they have three C's. Clairvoyant was one of them. And do you ever see your write-up, see what they said about you?
I did see this one, yes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I am clairvoyant, clairaudient, and clairsentient, I have the ability to see spirits and hear them and feel them.
Does this happen just automatically, or you have to call this up, or what?
I have a switch. I can turn it on and off because I like to be a normal person and have an everyday life. So when I go into that mode, it's immediate. It can happen at any time. I can completely control it.
You mentioned a little earlier about some of the contacts on the other side. How does that work? I mean, you just turn your switch on and... Somebody contacts you or what?
I turn the switch on. When I have somebody who is either a listener on a radio show, basically what it is the people bring the spirits with them, and then I'm here as the mediator, and I communicate with them and I interview them. I like to refer myself to the talk show host to the dead, because I like to interview spirits, and I ask them a lot of questions about them for validation.
What sort of things do they tell you? And what sort of things do you ask, even?
Well, it's interesting.
I guess that varies.
It does. Spirits, okay, on the average, spirits really have one purpose. And their purpose usually is to tell their loved ones that they love them and they're proud of them and that they're with them. But that's boring in a reading, okay? You can only do that so much. So for me, my intention is to immediately get validation so I can validate with the sitter who this spirit is, so that once they believe that I am talking to that person, then they will hear the messages that come through.
And you can do this on the phone with people?
80% of my readings I do on the phone, because I have clients all over the world.
So they contact you at your website and know how to get a hold of you
And we schedule it. Yes, we schedule it, and then I communicate with, what I do is I ask the spirit how they're related. My number one question for validation is, how did they die? Because there's so many ways that you can die. So I always want to ask them how they died.
Do they mind talking about that part?
They don't mind.
I mean, if you had a tragic death, you might not.
Suicides are the only ones that tend to hesitate on talking to me about it. They will usually look down or
Well, you actually see these spirits.
I see them and talk to them, yes.
And they're in human form?
They're in human form.
And they're not just like you're sitting here with me.
Exactly. And that's for my benefit.
Have you ever tried to reach out and touch one?
I have touched them several times, absolutely. And they've touched me, yes. What the real actual soul that's a spirit is a light body. So for me to read a light body wouldn't make a lot of sense to the sitter. So they will appear as their last life that they had on this earth.
And so obviously when you talk about that and you say the last life, we believe in reincarnation, I take it.
Oh, absolutely. Many lives. You've had many lives, Jerry.
Well, I'll take your word for it. are these lives associated at all? In other words, right now I'm an announcer on the radio. Three centuries ago, they didn't have the radio. So was that the town crier or something?
No. There's times when you've had lives where you're actually quite shy and didn't really speak very much. There's many different lives that you've had. I know you were a banker back in the West, and you dealt with a lot of money, and you had a very difficult job. So there's a lot of different, we incarnate in a soul group.
So I was a banker in the West?
Yes, you were.
In which state do you know?
Arkansas.
Okay. Well, I'm from Oklahoma. Do spirits move around the world? Or
they choose wherever they want to go next. Absolutely.
Well, I'm interested in the financial world. I used to do shows like that, so.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, great. Yeah.
That may have something to do with it.
It could be, yes. You always carry some knowledge over
from
your past
life. Do you know what you've been in previous lives?
Yes, I do. I've actually had past life regressions, and I've experienced past lives, which, sometimes.
Now, does someone else give you the past life, or can you do it yourself, the regression?
I do it myself.
How does that work? You just sit down and
I sit down and I can go into
a trance or something?
I can go into a deep meditative state, mm-hmm. and I will actually go into a past life and experience it for an actual amount of time. I've timed myself.
When you go into a past life like that, do you have the emotions of feeling and crying and hurting and all of that?
Absolutely. I came out of it crying. I had.
I mean, we all have very sad, tragic moments sometime in our lives.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, so that might be pretty tough on somebody if you come back and relive those things.
A lot of people will say if you regress and experience a past life, it might clear up an issue, a health issue or something that you're having in this life. And for me, I did have an issue that I had a choking around my throat for years and years that really drove me crazy, and I couldn't understand what it was. And I ended up doing a past life regression and by myself. I just did it myself. And I went into a life where I was actually hung. And when I came out of it, I experienced everything in that life. I mean, I felt like I experienced like several years worth about a 30-minute time. And when I came out of it, the choking was literally gone by 80%. And occasionally I still get it, but it's completely different. So that was, I don't know if that was just, acknowledging it or being able to clear that memory, because it was it wasn't sad. I understood it, but I remember feeling helpless because I was being hung for being a witch. And at the time, I wasn't a witch. I was actually an herbalist, and it was very political in the town. And to stand up with the rope around my neck and to watch the town people staring at me and ridicule, it was really difficult.
Did you have any idea where you were when this happened?
I was in Salem, Massachusetts.
So you were a Salem witch?
I was.
Only you really weren't.
Most
of the Salem witches weren't.
I was not a witch, actually. You know what's interesting is I was hung over a man. It was all over a man.
Women get me in trouble, and I'm sure men get women in trouble.
Oh, women are vicious. Vicious. I tell you, it's terrible. Yes, they are. It was bad.
So he told everybody, he broke up with you or whatever, and said, Well, no, she's a witch.
He was a town doctor.
Okay.
And I was an herbalist. I would grow these herbs. My sister and I did.
You were in competition with
him. No, I wasn't him. It was another woman who was in love with him.
Okay.
And another woman told everyone that I was to get rid of me.
Ah, so you speak with confidence when you say women are vicious.
Absolutely. I tell you, they are. I don't know how you men put up with us.
It's tough sometimes.
I know.
But the rewards are gratifying.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's a two-way street.
Right, yeah. So do we travel around the world? Are we always in the same location?
I mean, all
have
around
you ever
the world.
Been someplace else? I mean, in your previous lives?
Oh, yes. I had a life in Ireland. I had a life in India. I had a life in Colorado.
How much space between these lives? Does it vary with people?
That's a great question. I get asked that a lot. When I interview spirits, I always ask them, what's about the time frame earthwise that until you incarnate again? And it's about 50 years. But we also have a choice, so we don't have to. But we incarnate in soul groups. It's actual groups. So, for example, you've been your father's father in a past life. So a lot of times it's like as if the group's about to incarnate.
You seem to know a lot about me.
I'm psychic. But so a lot of times when you incarnate, you get to choose which role you're going to be. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, depending on what theme you're going to choose to come and experience in this life, you might choose a difficult role.
So is there a moderator or somebody that we get to talk to say, hey, I want to do this, or hey, I want to do that, or how does this work?
It's a soul group decision. The group comes together.
So you and I are in a group, we say, and we got Roberta, our producer, in this group, and maybe a couple other people, and we get together, and we're talking about, well, I want to come back as what? I mean, how do you even decide it? I mean, are you saying things are predestined? I'm following a script?
No. I absolutely do not believe in predestination.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
It's as if you were to say, you know what, Jerry, you're going to choose to be the husband this time, and you're going to become an alcoholic, and I'm going to be your wife, and you're going to be extremely abusive.
So we always hang around the same people?
Yes.
The same group?
The same group, but the group is thousands. Okay.
I understand.
So, absolutely.
I wonder how that works, how you get in a group. Yeah, but would somebody want to get out of that group and go to another group? I guess you're stuck.
Well, it's such a broad, huge group that you don't ever feel stuck. Believe me, it's all about love once you get to the other side. There's really no anger.
Well, you know, I really believe in agape love and basically, you know, the golden rule or whatever, karma. Maybe in a previous life, when I was a banker, I didn't believe that. Who knows? I don't know what the lessons would be.
Well, you were very difficult in that life. You were a banker. You had a lot of responsibility, and you took away land from people that owed you money.
I don't know if I could do that job these days.
No, it'd be too difficult these days. But back then, you did. You had a big responsibility.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about on a personal decision, not practical.
I know.
I'm not quite sure that. There's a lot of things that I just really rather not do. I'm not a pansy by any means, but at the same time, and I can rise to the occasion. But I really, that's one place that's kind of ticklish for me, I guess. And maybe that's the reason I'm back as I am these days. I don't know.
You're a good guy. You picked a good guy this time.
Well, good. You know how to treat the interviewer. You've been in radio a long time.
That's true.
So what's next in your life? This life.
This life. I can only do one life at a time.
We don't know what's happening in the future, or do we?
I
mean, we hear there's no time and space sometimes.
Our future is what you created. It really is. You have the power to create your future is always a complete white canvas. You can paint it any way you want. There may be other colors that come in from other people that you can't control, but you could always repaint it white and start over again. So the thing is, well, for me, what's next is I'm writing a book currently, and I have more radio shows that I have coming up and more retreats.
You have a book out now?
I don't have a book out now. I have been the biggest procrastinator for the past 6 years.
Well, it's not easy to write these books. I used to be a writer. I still write a lot in my job.
I've got over half the book finished, but it's just I have three children and a wonderful marriage, and I get busy and with my travel.
Do you think you knew your husband before?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. My husband's I consider my husband's a baby soul. He's he's the grounded part of me. He reels me back into earth and reality when I need it. So.
Well, it's probably one of the reasons you guys got married.
That's right. We've been together for 30 years.
You're not that old.
I met him when I was 15 when
California
I met him.
Some of these California girls, okay, that explains it. Some of these California women, they look pretty good.
I'm 44.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to be my age. Well, yeah, you do, the alternative. But maybe let's talk about that alternative when you die. What's happening for that 50 years before I decide to come back?
Well, the first thing when you die, somebody that you know in the human form will come to get you so you feel comfortable because you're really not clear yet that you're dead. And then the most important thing that you do, and I call this personal judgment day, and it's the only judgment day, is when you have to go through your life review. And that usually can take up to a couple weeks as far as earth time.
Now, somebody there is judging you?
No. Oh, no. No one's judging you. You're judging you. You're taken into a room with your guide, your spirit guide. Mm-hmm. They take you into a room, and this is how they've showed it to me. It's like the top of a giant glass globe, and you look into this globe, and you literally are shown everything you did and said in this recent life, and you get to experience the emotions, the feelings, and the results of the people that you did and said it to. So you get to experience that. And you get to also see the aftermath of your death and your funeral, all of that.
That sounds like a broadcasting consultant big companies hire, and they come in and review your shows every day.
Exactly.
Do you feel like you should have done that?
Well, sometimes when I'm yelling at one of my kids or something, yeah. I'll think, wait, do I want to see that in my life review? Yeah. And so I have to kind of think about it. But, you know, it's very difficult for a lot of spirits. I've talked to child molesters. I've talked to abusive spouses. I've talked to people that committed murder. And what they have to experience in their life review is so difficult. And it really is judgment day. It really is.
All of these people have done these bad things. Do they wish they hadn't?
Oh, yes. They wish they hadn't, but at the same time, there's kind of a universal understanding of the choice of the role that they chose in that soul group.
So, I was a banker one time. I'm a radio announcer now, whatever. And next life, I sit for the soul group, and I decide I want to be whatever. Is that, or is the career even important?
The career is just a part of the okay. role. It's okay. a part, because career is important, because you're going to affect so many other people in your career. Mm-hmm. So it is important. It's all about the interaction with people, and your career will decide what kind of interaction that you'll have with people also.
Well, Marisa, we could talk for hours.
I know. It's a great subject, isn't it?
It certainly is. Let's give the book. It's not out, probably not for a couple of years.
I'm hoping it'll be out in the next 6 months.
Okay, good. And do you have any videos or anything?
They can go to my website. I have videos. I have a lot of radio interviews that I've done. They can YouTube me. I'm on YouTube. I did the International UFO Congress 2 years ago. I've done a lot of UFO congresses and conferences. So,
well, why, what do you find interesting about that?
I got asked about 3 years ago to do one of the symposiums, and it opened up a whole new world for me. I have had a couple of, I would say, paranormal experiences that I can't even really explain. And, you know, I grew up, my father, my whole life believed in UFOs, and we'd talk about it in our backyard. And so I've always believed in it, but I'd never had any experiences. And then I had experiences. And then once I started doing these conferences, it was like unbelievable how everything opened up. I now have been able to communicate with souls of extraterrestrials. And I've done, for example, when I did the UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada 2 years ago, I was standing on a stage in front of 1,000 people, and all of a sudden there were alien spirits in the room everywhere. And that was very new to me. It was amazing.
Do these ETs have the same cycle of reincarnation as us?
Yes, absolutely.
They have souls.
They live longer lives, though. I mean, as far as their actual physical life, they live much longer. They can live a couple hundred years.
How come we can, I wonder?
Because we just keep damaging our bodies over and over and over.
Our soul, doing everything it feels good.
Our soul is using a body that's a human, like a machine, and we damage it and we pollute it. And so that's something that is not predestined. I mean, we actually damage our bodies, and bodies just can't live that long.
It's been fascinating. Any closing thoughts? Something you'd like to bring out we haven't?
I just think the most important thing is that people constantly question everything and search for answers, and that's the most important thing. And not any one person has all the answers, and not any one person may be right. It's all opinion or by experience, and that, you know, as long as your listeners question and they look, the most important thing is most of the answers that they will get actually are within themselves. So they really need to pay attention to what they sense themselves.
Their inner thoughts.
Absolutely. Well, everyone is very psychic. I mean, not everyone, but if most of the people, especially that listen to your show, are very, very psychic people. So, and I teach psychic development, and I always encourage people to, open up.
Obviously, you feel that ability can be developed.
Oh, absolutely. It's already there. It's just another sense that's there. You just have to exercise it like a muscle.
Marisa, thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Jerry.
MarisaRyan.com, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm Jerry Pippin at JerryPippin.com, and we're at Angel Fire, and they also have a website, but I think there's another word in there, and I don't remember what it was. So anyway, we have a link to it. Thanks very much, Marisa.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a moment. You know, on the Internet, you can get lost. You hear some people, some hosts saying, bookmark us or put us on your favorites. Well, that's a good idea. If you don't have one of our websites or all three of them on your favorites, we suggest you do that now. And come back often. We change content every day. So come and see us at jerrypippin.com, iPodShows.net, and UFOShowsToGo.com. We're at Angel Fire Resort in New Mexico and at the 2010 Paranormal Symposium and also Film Festival. And Michael Horn is with us, no stranger to any of us, really. Michael, how are you doing?
Jerry, I'm doing fine. I thank you for taking the time to interview me here.
Oh, well, I wanted to talk to you. First of all, you got two reasons I need to talk to you, maybe
okay.
Three or four.
All right.
First of all, I got a film.
True.
And tell us a little bit about that.
The film is The Silent Revolution of Truth. It's the documentary that we made on Billy Meyer and his life, his information. And they played it for the attendees here yesterday afternoon. Yes.
And this film, how long ago did you make it?
We actually released it at the beginning of 2008. So it's a year and three quarters or so ago. And it's just
is it available as a DVD? People can order it?
Exactly. It's available primarily from my website, which is theyfly.com, T-H-E-Y-F, as in Frank, L-Y, theyfly.com.
And we enjoy your website, by the way.
Oh, good. Thank you.
You can see some interesting things. And I don't think there's anybody... especially now, but with Wendell Stevens passing away, but you've been a spokesman really for Billy Meyer. You are the premier spokesman.
Well, I have a contractual arrangement, if you will, to represent his work and information in the English-speaking world, and I love doing that. It's a volunteer basis job, and I
Always getting accused of getting a lot of money out of it.
I know, I love it. I should just tell people that make that accusation that when in 2004, when Billy and I actually drew up a contract to do this, I said, as long as I can be free to disagree or say I don't know about something that's in the case and that I do it voluntarily so there's no money exchanging hands between us because people are going to accuse me of it anyhow and it might as well not be true. This way I'm free to be who I am and still represent the material.
When was the first time you met Billy Meyer?
First time I actually met Billy was in 2000. I went to Switzerland then for
so
the first time.
It's been 10 years now.
Yeah, I guess 11 if you actually go, 2000.
Right. Okay. And you went over to his place in Sweden or Switzerland or wherever. Where is it?
He lives in an area that's just northeast of Zurich, about 45 minutes outside of Zurich, called Schmidt-Ruti. And I went there, as you say, first time in 2000, and I've been there 12 times altogether.
Now, how did you find out about Billy Meier?
Walked into the Bodie Tree Bookstore, which is a bookstore that is soon to disappear in Los Angeles, but a lot of, you know, metaphysical, paranormal, UFO books and things. Saw the first coffee table book that was produced by Lee and Britt Elders, who worked with Wendell Stevens. And when I looked down at those photos, they just screamed out authentic to me, and that was my beginning with the Meier case.
Now, you need to, most people know about Billy Meier. Not everyone. So you need to give a little background. He's had contact for a long time now.
Exactly, Jerry. He claims that since he was a five-year-old boy, he's been meeting voluntarily, wide awake, face-to-face, with fully human beings from another star system who have tutored and mentored him and taught him many, many things, and then also always, of course, encouraged, allowed him to do his own self-education in the world. So he's a man of, you could say, of two worlds, the world of Earth and of the universe, having had the opportunity to travel with the Pleiaren extraterrestrials to see other worlds, other star systems, supposedly also to go back and forward in time. He's now about 73 years old. His contact started when he was five, so it's 68-plus years since that began.
And when they take him forward in time or backwards, does he actually show up there, or is he looking at a screen on a ship? Or?
They actually can do both. In other words, in some cases, they simply will observe certain things that he's also able to see and even photograph. And in other cases, he's literally been, with one of the extraterrestrials, he was on the ground at least a couple of times, actually, in those times in our past history, as mind-boggling as it is to contemplate.
Where did he go backwards to?
One of the trips was back to Jerusalem in 32 A.D. Another trip was, I think, 14th century France.
32 A.D. was at the time of the crucifixion?
Yes.
Was he there?
Prior to that. Now, again, just for everybody's, you know, reasonable senses and all, I'm just presenting information to you that is contained in the case, and I'm not even asking you, of course, to believe it. You can read it. There's no way we can prove it, you or I. We can just try to take from it what we will. But to answer your question, he claims that he was brought back to 32 A.D. prior to the crucifixion, and at that time, Asket, one of his mentors, the second teacher, who was a woman from the Dahl universe, an adjoining universe to ours, took him and a man, a Russian man, who happened upon their encampment in the Jordanian desert by accident, and they offered him the opportunity to take this trip with them. And this is all transcribed. I will eventually put up a transcript on my website. It's very interesting. The man decides to go along, and then he kind of freaks out and throws up, and he's a little beside himself, and then he kind of pulls himself back into reality. It's an interesting story, but what happens there in 32 A.D., we're told in this transcript, Meier is able to meet and walk and talk with a man who he says was named Emmanuel, spelled with a J, and a man who knew that his name would be changed in later time to a name he would never have been called in his lifetime, Jesus Christ. And he and Meier sat and had a bit of a conversation, which was fully transcribed and is quite interesting just to read. And one can take it or leave it as they wish.
And, I thought of you immediately, well, not immediately, but within 48 hours of when they had the deep water horizon. Because a lot of Billy Meier's stories, at least the ones I've talked to you about, seems to relate to our environment and what's going to happen, and it's not good.
Well, exactly. Meier, I mean, you've said it, I'm afraid, but in 1951, Meier was the first person that I know of who was writing about and warning about what he called unnatural climate change. He, in 58, wrote specifically about the unnatural global warming. And in both of those letters that he sent about, he talked about the damage that we were doing to our world, how it was going to produce enormous cataclysmic earthquakes, seaquakes, tsunamis, floods, blizzards, tornadoes, hurricanes, and changes in our topography. In 1976, on July 8th, I believe, well, 1976, I won't know that I've penned the date, Meyer was informed that our extraction of petroleum and natural gas from the earth, our mining of the earth's ores, would lead to tremendous earthquake damage, increased volcanic activity. The earth would, as they said, collapse in upon itself. We now know that worldwide, in addition to this year alone, Jerry, we've had over 17 earthquakes over 7.0 magnitude worldwide. That's an enormous number. And we've had a proliferation of sinkholes appearing around the world. A friend of mine in Europe did a compilation on the sinkholes. Every place from Belize, China, Guatemala, Florida, Canada, you name it, where there are sinkholes, there has been either mining and or the extraction of petroleum or natural gas from the earth.
And, during the midst of the deep water horizon, all of a sudden they had earthquake up all the way up in Canada and some sinkholes.
Well, the BP.
I guess that's on the Madrid Fault or close to it.
I guess I'm not sure.
And it goes down to the Gulf.
Okay.
And,
yes, exactly.
And as you drain out this cavity of oil, it has to go someplace.
Exactly, and this disaster in the Gulf, the information that Meyer received and recently published about it. There were, at the time that Meyer had been contacted, I think in late May or early June, 304 million gallons of oil did escape from the earth. We're going to have a lot of collateral damage on a number of fronts from this disaster. It will come down in the form of toxic rain, the increased methane that's being released in the seas and on the earth from the melting of the permafrost is going to damage the climate further. We will have some serious wave activity. We are now in a time historically where we, humanity, have precipitated so much damage that it's going to be a rather dramatic ride from here on.
So these beings from other worlds, and it's a specific place, I guess, really.
Mm-hmm. They claim that they originate, at least live now, in a star system that's 80 light years beyond the Pleiades that we see in the night sky. There's no life in the Pleiades in the night sky. But beyond that, by 80 light years, they claim that's where their world is.
Well, so they come here and they tell Billy Meyer these things about what's going to happen. What is the deal? Are they just going to say, too bad, or can you change it?
Right.
Do they have a mission?
Yes. And, you know, people can argue a debate, if you will, how effective it's been to do it this way. But the whole point of giving us prophecies has been to warn us, starting long ago, of what was coming our way if we did not change the direction that we were moving our world in. So it was never to doom us that they warned us. On the contrary, it was to help us wake up, take charge of our own world, and stop doing certain things which are so destructive to our planet. Their mission was to insert this information in a way that did not absolutely convincingly establish their own existence. It was not meant to prove that they existed, but to give us everything up to just short of absolute proof so that we would struggle with this and make it our own whichever way we took it.
Yeah, Michael Horn, there's a little music in the background, but don't worry about it. We've tested it out, and we can hear you fine.
Perfect.
And I may have a little trouble hearing you, but the audience will hear you fine.
Okay.
When Billy Meyer first had his first contact, when was it?
In 1942, he was just 5 years old.
That was during the World War II.
Just towards the tail end there of World War II.
And when was the last time he got a contact?
I would guess, since we're sitting here speaking now on a Saturday, it could have been just this past week.
That,
could have been.
That recent.
Yeah, he has, his contacts are ongoing. He has them just about every month for sure, at least once a month.
How do you keep track of it?
He does.
Does he let you know or what?
I find out because they will, as soon as a transcript has been made available of the contact, nowadays we've gotten a little bit more efficient so that the German language transcript can be made available to some English-speaking people who can work on translating the contacts for us. And occasionally when I'm talking to people over there, they may mention, well, Billy had a contact 3 days ago and some of this was discussed or that. Sometimes a contact contains information that's really just for him and isn't that important that we know about it.
Now, I want to ask you, which may seem like a facetious question, but I'm serious, kind of. In 1942, he had a contact. He had a contact last week or recently. They come in a craft,
yeah,
and land in his backyard someplace, or back here behind his
No, they don't need to land. There's two ways they can come, and because they do have missions that involve them being in their craft.
Do they beam him up or what?
Or they beam down now into his office, and sometimes he will go with them even these days.
They come and see him?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
They come into his
physically
office.
Physically present, absolutely.
And I want to get into that in a minute, but I want to get back to my first question. From the 1942 to now, do they have different models of spacecraft? The reason I ask you is because on the Internet, there's some pictures that says Billy Meyer's spacecraft. Well, I mean, I assumed he had more than one coming to see him.
You're right. They've come in a number of different designed craft. I think there may be six variations or so that they have shown up in.
And are they male and female?
Yes, fully human, male and female, virtually indistinguishable from us, and with representatives of what we would recognize as different earthly races. Not that they are earthly, they're extraterrestrials who have the same coloration or form of various races that we are familiar with on Earth.
And have you ever gotten, we get messages and all of this, all this important stuff, but are they... Do they have emotions and relationships? And
yes, everything. They marry. They have very long lives. They study numerous fields of sciences and technologies and arts. They contribute a minimum of a 2 hours a day to their own civilization as work to contribute to the greater good. And then they are free to pursue the studies in different fields, to work in different fields, to travel, to go on different missions related to their...
So that's how they support themselves? It's a community thing? Mm-hmm. Somewhat like what Billy Meyer has?
Well, in a sense, except they have moved past money in their world. And what they do, this is not, there's a fine line between what it sounds like and what it is. They have a system that is not unlike a credit card. In other words, they keep track that everybody participates and contributes of themselves. As long as a person's contributing, they can have whatever they need. Now, put that in the context of...
Well, I mean, your detractors will say, well, that's communism.
Well, that's why I said the fine line. There's that fine line. The difference is this.
So?
Right. Here's how I perceive it. See, communism has hierarchies.
Yeah.
And they do.
Right. The same thing as capitalism. All of a sudden,
where's the difference in the hierarchies, and they have this and you don't. Here's the thing. When you, and we have to surmise this just through thinking about it. When you live in a race, a space traveling race that has access to free energy, has in its history already millennia of space traveling and their ancestors, you don't need to amass pieces of paper or gold coins, because the rule of law there is, and it's very firm and strict, as long as you are contributing, take what you need, because you're no longer thinking of how much can I amass.
I wonder if they have any slackers.
If they do, they don't partake. From what I understand, it's probably at the absolute minimal level, but they are not going to be able to have those things that are freely available to all the people, meaning various craft and opportunities to do things. When you no longer are struggling for your livelihood and that you have what you need, then you have a natural adjustment to say, well, since I'm not in a state of lack, since nobody's taking something that's mine, I have food, I have shelter, I have transportation, I have the freedom to study anything I want. I can travel in this universe. I can be part of different missions. What is it that I, amassing something will give me? We're not evolved enough to yet even understand that we try to amass the excessively unnecessary and unnecessarily excessive, and then we leave it to other people who fight about it.
What happens when Billy Meyer passes away?
The body of work that needed to be transmitted and transcribed has been done. For the most part, we now have it, and it's been preserved electronically as well as in books and everything else. We don't need, at this point on Earth any longer, we won't need a prophet. We don't need somebody to come and try and straighten us, because the information in the case, the core teaching in the case, is identical to the core teaching of the six prophets before Meyer, although each of these other times it was adulterated, changed, turned into religion, and people were led astray. And that's because these people, these Pleiaren, whose ancestors also were the mentors and teachers of the previous prophets, are not perfect beings. There is no such thing. This is human beings trying to work to assist other humans to evolve, to mature, to grow spiritually in every way. So we no longer need a prophet because we have the teaching. It's now, for centuries to come, up to human beings. Do we wish to learn from this and to study it and to test it?
Michael Horn, I wish we had more time. It's thefly.com.
They fly. They fly. Yes.
They fly.
Yes.
Okay, I want to get it right on the web.
Thank you.
And we have a link to it anyway.
Thank you, Jerry.
And you have all kinds of things on there. Have you ever written a book?
I haven't. I've thought about it. I actually have some that are in various states of completion, but I've made some films.
They can get a hold of this film there, right?
Yes, right through our website, and we've made everything available that people want and links to all sorts of free information.
Thanks very much.
My pleasure, Jerry.
I'm Jerry Pippin, and you've been listening to our broadcast direct from Angel Fire Resort. And, of course, it's in conjunction with the 2010 Paranormal Symposium and Film Festival. And I tell you, it's a good little place to come. If you've never been to Angel Fire, I would recommend it sometime. You don't have to be a skier, but if you are, you're going to find out they got some great slopes here. Roberta Scott's our on-location producer. Jane Swartley is our web producer. Until next time, cheers.